Welcome into episode 8 of Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. With me for the second week in a row is my co-host, Garrett Thornton. Garrett, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How you doing, Casey?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you for joining us again. Just want to give a quick shout out to the band Liebecker. They provide music for the show. They're a great band from the Great Northwest. If you haven't checked them out, please do so. Their website is www.liebeckermusic.com. Three great guys, great music, just performing for everybody that wants to listen. So we hope you will. And speaking of listening, we're grateful to have you if you're hearing the show tonight. Garrett, we got a lot to talk about. You know, there's some great games going on tonight, one of which, and the most important for anyone here, is going to be the Ducks just grinding out a nitty-gritty victory over Michigan, who a lot of people thought was going to be the team to ruin Oregon's season. So what, did you get to see that game? What did you think?
Yeah, I did. I watched the game. It was I thought that Oregon was going to take control in the first half at one point when they were up by four. I thought they got a stop. They drove down, and I thought that was when the game was going to turn. But Michigan, man, they stayed in it the whole time. It was back and forth and back and forth. We couldn't ask for a much better game here in March.
And, you know, it was a total team effort. You know, the last couple of games, we've had a couple of superstars putting up some big points. But tonight, it really kind of came down to one guy, and that's Jordan Bell. But if it wasn't for him, you know, there's still a lot of players doing a lot of things for this team. And, you know, Michigan has such great team defense and great team shooting that it really took a team effort from Oregon tonight. I was really excited that they pulled that out, showed that they can win the tough, close, gritty games, that there doesn't always have to be an offensive blowout for them to win, especially against a team that was a lot of people's dark horse in this tournament. So, you know, kudos to them. They go to back-to-back Elite Eights, and, you know, even without Chris Boucher, who I think everybody really kind of wrote off this Oregon team as a national title contender when he was lost in the Pac-12 tournament, without him, Jordan Bell really stepped up. And, you know, we'll kind of see what he can do against the winner of Kansas and Purdue. But, you know, how excited were you to see him really grinding out points in the paint and getting some rebounds tonight?
I mean, it was great. In the first game against Iona, he played really, really well. He got a little beat up. I tweaked his knee and then struggled against Rhode Island. Their defense pushed the Oregon offense out, and so they just really had a hard time getting the ball down low to Jordan. But tonight, he made things happen. 16 points, 13 rebounds, couple blocks, a steal, an assist, four offensive rebounds, and two of those offensive rebounds were late in the game off of missed free throws. So that was huge for the team. It really sealed the game late with those couple offensive rebounds. So if that Jordan Bell shows up on Saturday against the winner of Kansas-Purdue, I think I like Oregon's chances. But I really think that the bigger issue for this team is they need some production off the bench. They had 6 points off the bench tonight. They were 2 for 8 shooting. They just weren't very good. Cavell Bigby-Williams just hasn't been able to get things going off the bench to fill in for Boucher. So I realize we're in March, and I realize some of these guys might have to play extended minutes. But if there's any kind of foul trouble on Saturday, I don't know that Oregon fans can trust whoever's coming off the bench.
Yeah, that'll be a big question mark. And if they get Purdue, I like that matchup a lot more. Kansas has some superstars that are probably going to be NBA lottery picks. Then they've also got, you know, the home court advantage because that game will be played in the state of Kansas. You know, if they get Kansas, does that scare you? Do you think they can take them on? I mean, with the stars that they've got on the Oregon team, or what do you think about that?
I mean, yeah, it's not an ideal matchup. You're playing against a team that was number one in the nation for a lot of the year, a team that's number one in the bracket that, like you said, is playing at home, and a ton of talent. Josh Jackson, the latest Draft Express mock draft, Josh Jackson is the third pick in the draft. So he's the small forward. So who's guarding Josh Jackson? Is that probably Dylan Brooks? You're going to put Dylan Ennis on him some, but he's smaller. And then the point guard for Kansas, Mason, he's just as talented, and he can control a game without scoring a ton of points. And so I think that those two guys could give nightmares to Coach Altman between now and the game on Saturday. But I think Oregon's shown that they can play with and that they can beat anybody. They played in, I would argue, probably the toughest conference in the nation with Arizona and UCLA, USC. There's a ton of talent in the Pac-12. And so I think that Oregon can beat anybody. I, as an Oregon fan, would root for Oregon on Saturday. I think Kansas would be favored by 8 to 10 points because it is at home in Kansas. I think I like Oregon's chances against Purdue, so I think a lot of Oregon fans are rooting for Purdue tonight.
So say you do get Kansas. You know, you mentioned Frank Mason, their point guard. He's actually their leading scorer so far in the tournament with over 20 points a game. Josh Jackson has, you know, about 18, 19 points a game, still really good, especially for how good he is and how much the defense focuses on him. But, I mean, they've got four different players that have scored in double digits and points both games. And they've also got Landon Lucas, who has at least 10 points and 10 rebounds in both games. Does Oregon have enough firepower on offense with just their starting five to put up those kinds of numbers? Or, I mean, as you alluded to, they're going to need some bench help, but is that going to be enough, or do they need like a major game out of Dylan Brooks or one of their other star players to make this happen?
I think to make that happen, they would need a major game from somebody. And the obvious candidate's Dylan Brooks. Tyler Dorsey could have a huge game. He's played really well ever since the Pac-12 tournament. But the one matchup that would concern me is, as much as I love Peyton Pritchard, I don't know that I love that matchup, Peyton Pritchard versus Frank Mason, because
right.
Mason's 22, he's been around, he's super talented, he's the true leader on the floor, where you still, even tonight in the Sweet 16, this far into the season, you still saw freshman moments from Peyton Pritchard. And so I think that that's definitely something, a point of concern for Oregon fans moving into Saturday.
Well, the nice thing is if they do somehow get Purdue, who is, you know, in a lot of ways a similar team to Michigan, so, you know, and they don't have as many shooters as Michigan did, but they are really good at winning with team defense, and they won the Big Ten in the regular season. But they've only got a couple guys that have scored in double digits both games. Nobody that's really a consistent rebounder other than Caleb Swanigan. But, you know, Vance Edwards is a really talented scorer, and he can rebound also. So that could be trouble for them. I mean, just because they get Purdue doesn't mean that they're going to win. But I think it is a more rounded, well-rounded matchup for them. Flipping over. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So, I mean, flipping over to that matchup, you know, Kansas and Purdue are locked in a pretty tight battle right now. And it's really anyone's guess who's going to win that game. And I think that's the kind of game Oregon's going to have against them, is something really tight, keep the scoring down, but make sure they take some really good shots. I think tonight they took a lot of really questionable shots. And, you know, they were settling for a lot of twos, so they weren't really high percentage twos. I think their offense is going to have to really play strong, regardless of whether the two teams they get. Otherwise, I don't know that the Final Four is in their future. I think tonight they got a little lucky in some points and they were good in others. They're going to have to be a lot more lucky than good, or a lot more good than lucky against a team like Kansas or Purdue if they're going to advance.
Well, I agree, but I also think that we need to realize how awesome it is that this Oregon program's made it to two Elite Eights in a row. And now, as an Oregon fan and covering the team, you don't want them to settle for that, but they're... Once things settle after tomorrow night's games, there will be 8 teams in the country left, and Oregon's one of those teams. And so I think that this team's done amazing things this year. They won the Pac-12 in the regular season, a share of it at least. They lost Boucher, which really hurt, but they're still sitting here in the Elite Eight, and I think that's something that we need to recognize and that I think is something that Dana Altman can move forward with. They've got a huge recruiting class coming in next year, so the momentum's on Oregon's side, so I wouldn't doubt them against anybody right now.
Yeah, and they've got just as much talent as anyone. They may not have the household superstar names that a team like Kansas does, but that doesn't mean that they're not super talented and well-coached and deserve to be here. So I agree with you that while the Elite Eight would be a good thing to hang your hat on, I would love to see them in the Final Four. Love to see them even more in the championship somewhere they haven't been during the modern NCAA bracket. So I'm rooting for them to do as well as they can. And if they lose a hard fought game to either Kansas or Purdue, as long as they leave it all out there on the court, I'm fine with whatever ends up happening. You know, they've had a tremendous season. By no means does a loss negate what they've done. You know, you should still celebrate as far as they've got. I mean, back-to-back Elite Eights is fantastic. A lot of schools just struggle to even get to an Elite Eight, let alone two in a row.
Yeah, I agree, and I think the future's bright. My question is, and one of my questions I was going to ask you later was, who from this team do you think heads to the draft this year?
I think that if they had fallen tonight, that Dylan Brooks might have thought about sticking around another year. But I think after getting to back-to-back Elite Eights, he's probably done what he's going to do in the college game, and he'll move on. The other guys I'm not so sure about. You know, Bell needs some time. Boucher needs some time. Ennis, you know, I guess we'll see. And, you know, so far, they've got so much talent. It'd be great if all of them could return next year and have an even better recruiting class coming in. But, you know, and actually with the NBA climate, you're allowed to test the draft waters before you commit to going into the draft. So maybe Brooks does the same thing he did last year and just tests the waters to see where he thinks teams are going to take him. And if he doesn't like where he's landing, maybe he comes back for another year. But yeah, I just think
Brooks and Dorsey both tested the draft last year. And so I would expect them to do the same thing. I think that if Jordan Bell went to the draft, I think he would be a borderline first round, beginning of the second round type pick. He's just super athletic. He knows how to use his body. I know it's a terrible comparison because he has not played well in the NBA, but he's a Thomas Robinson type. And Thomas Robinson was the fifth pick in the draft. So I just think that he is an NBA type player. He's got an NBA body. I would love to see him come back and put another year in Oregon, but I think if anybody goes, it might be Jordan Bell, because I think when he tests the waters for the draft, I think his draft stock will be the highest of the group. Dorsey, I think, can shoot the lights out in NBA teams. Obviously, you look around the league, that's what they want. They want guys that can shoot. They want guys that can put it in, and Dorsey can do that. Dylan Brooks, I question. I don't know where he fits in the NBA. I don't know if he's a two, a three. He's not big enough to be a stretch four. I know that we're in the era of positionless players. I mean, you've got LeBron James playing point guard, and you've got Draymond Green playing power forward and center, even though he's legitimately like 6'7". But I think that Dylan Brooks could definitely use another year of development and another year of finding a role, how he would fit in an NBA team. But I also think that the NBA is great at developing guys into what they want them to be. And a lot of these guys, they want to get paid. That's why they're doing this. They've been working their whole life to get here. So I don't blame anyone for going to the NBA. But I'd love to see another year of this team, especially if they can make a little bit deeper run this year and see what happens.
Yeah, I think if NBA teams want to take a hard look at Dylan Brooks, they probably need to compare him to some early career game film of an Andre Iguodala or somebody like that, that, you know, plays really well like a shooting guard, but they're probably too big for that position, but they're not big enough to play a power forward. And, you know, they have a lot of good components to their game, but as far as being really well-rounded and being a superstar, it may not be there. But that doesn't mean that you can't be a tremendous player.
And another example, just right here in Portland, is Evan Turner.
Yep.
Evan Turner can't shoot the three very well. He's got a deadly mid-range game. He knows how to find his own shot. He can set you in your own offense, even though he's not the point guard on the floor. And I think that Dylan Brooks could play that type of role too, which isn't a bad thing.
No.
Evan Turner just signed a $70 million contract.
That's pretty nice.
So there's roles for those kind of guys in the league. And so I think that Dylan Brooks will eventually be in the NBA. I just don't know if it's going to be this NBA draft or not.
Well, and, you know, if he goes somewhere and he's the sixth man, if it's on a good team, that doesn't hurt either. You know, the Clippers will be looking for a small forward. The Blazers will be. There's going to be a lot of teams that need some help at the three and somebody that can also play the two. So, and he'll fit into that niche pretty well, the same way Evan Turner does. And so does Andre Iguodala and some other guys. You know, Nick Batum did that for Portland and he's doing it for Charlotte. You know, there's if you're diverse on offense and you can play some good defense, even if you don't have the greatest outside shot, I think teams will find a role for you if you can stuff the stat sheet.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So what games are you looking forward to tomorrow the most?
The one that I'm looking forward to most is Kentucky-UCLA tomorrow night. I just think those two teams have some history. Obviously, UCLA played them earlier in the season and in Kentucky, and I just think that this game, when I looked at the Sweet 16 matchups, this is the one that I looked at and circled, and I just think that it's a good combination of talent, superstars, head coaches that have personality and that have been here before, and I just think that it's going to be a fun one to watch. I hope that it's a close one, just like the games tonight, and I hope we get another classic tomorrow night.
Well, you know, you spoke of the spread of talent, and, you know, number two versus number three, and they both got some lottery pick potential, and, you know, Lonzo Ball and Malik Monk, I mean, that's going to be a fun matchup. But, you know, both teams have, you know, 3 to 4 starters that can score in double digits. They can get some rebounds. And it's just, it's insane how much talent they both have. And I'm surprised this is coming in the Elite Eight. You know, you would probably most years dream up this matchup as a Final Four or a final game. And instead we're getting it in the Elite Eight. So I'm really excited for that, too. You know, neither team has a really elite scorer, but everyone on the starting five can score in double digits. And they all help out in a lot of different places, and they can play good defense, but they can also blow you out of the stadium with a huge offensive performance. I'm really excited for that. I think it's going to be a really fun one. I'm glad it's on Friday. I think people are going to be probably phoning it in a lot at work tomorrow, trying to get a glimpse of what this game is going to show them.
Yeah, good thing it's the 6:30 game tomorrow night, or else we'd all be in trouble.
But yeah.
I think the one guy to keep an eye on tomorrow night, I think Malik Monk is due for a hot shooting night. He's only averaging 13 points in the tournament so far for the first two games, and I think that he's going to put a 20-25 point game tomorrow night. I think he's going to show what he can do, because he's been showing all year that he's one of the best shooters in the country, and I just think that on this big stage that it's about time for him to step up and help Kentucky get to where they want to go here in the Elite Eight Final Four.
But I'm curious how that's going to go with TJ Leaf on the other side, because he's averaging 17 points a game, and he's averaging about 6.5 rebounds a game to go with it. And, you know, a lot of people are focusing so much on Lonzo Ball, and rightfully so, but TJ Leaf's been their best scorer so far in the tournament, and he's had some really good all-around games. So has Welsh, so has Hamilton, so has Ball. So it's going to be really interesting how Kentucky attacks the starting five of UCLA. They can score at will. They're one of the best offensive teams in the country. They average over 90 points a game. I mean, it's going to be, I hope it's a shootout, because that'd be amazing, but it could easily be a really slow defensive grind the way the games have been tonight.
Yeah, I think that one's going to be an offensive shootout, because I just think that those two teams have a ton of offensive talent. And to be honest, I don't know how much defensive talent are on either side of that floor. So I think that there's going to be a lot of points scored tomorrow night, especially compared to tonight's games.
What about the other two games? We've got Butler and North Carolina, and then South Carolina and Baylor. We also have Washington and Florida. Anything in those three games that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Baylor team is really talented and fun to watch. The Ducks matched up against them early and lost to them, and that kind of dropped Oregon's stock nationally for a while. It took them a while to get back to where they thought they were going to be. But Jonathan Moatley is super talented, and that team is just super gritty. I like watching that Baylor team, and I think they're going to take care of South Carolina. The other games, I think that North Carolina is probably the best team in the country. They've got a ton of talent, and they've been there before. I think they're going to take care of business. And then that Wisconsin-Florida team, I honestly don't know who to pick in that game. Wisconsin is here for a reason, and Florida can score some points. So I think that's going to be a close one. So that's definitely one I'll keep an eye on once that UCLA-Kentucky game's over.
Well, then the other one that we haven't really touched on is Xavier and Arizona, which is the other game playing tonight. And, you know, Xavier was your call to get to the Sweet 16. Are you calling them to make it to the Elite Eight, or do you think Arizona's going to beat them?
I would love to have faith in something like that, but I just can't. I think Arizona is the vastly superior team, and I don't think it's going to be close tonight. I mean, by the time I listen to this podcast tomorrow and share it with all my friends and whatever, I could sound like a complete fool. But I think Arizona wins this game pretty comfortably, a 10-15-point game. I think Arizona just has a ton of talent, and they're going to put it all together against an inferior team that's here because they caught a few breaks and because they won some games. Obviously, they beat Florida State, which was a huge win. But I just think Arizona has more talent on the floor. They're the more experienced team, and I just think that they're going to take charge early in the game, and I don't know that it'll be close at any point tonight.
Well, and the stats definitely back you up. All five of Arizona's starting five scored in double digits, both round one and round two. In fact, they had Markkanen and Alkins that scored 20 points in the first round each, and then they both were in double digits in round two. So it's going to be pretty crazy, and, you know, Xavier will have their work cut out for them. I think a lot of people were surprised that they got out of the first round then and actually knocked one of my favorites in the tournament, Maryland. And then in the second round, they really just handled Florida State, and I think a lot of people were surprised by that. So, you know, I think they'll give Arizona a run for their money. I don't know if they can win that game, but I think it might be closer than people might think. Arizona has a lot of talent and a lot of veteran leadership, but it's the March Madness tournament. Anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
One amazing game by one player like Blewett or Makura, I mean, those guys can go off. They're both really talented scorers, and they've got good rounded games, and they're good outside shooters. So, you know, Arizona's going to have their work cut out for them. You know, they might have had a couple easy games, and that might catch up to them.
Now we'll see. I think that it's going to be Arizona's game from the beginning, and I think that you're going to see three Pac-12 teams in the Elite Eight, because I think that UCLA, I've been going back and forth all day, but I think UCLA will pull out a close one tomorrow night against Kentucky. That's a coin toss, but with Oregon already in the Elite Eight and Arizona, I think they'll be in the Elite Eight easily. That'd be huge for the Pac-12 to put three teams in the Elite Eight.
Absolutely. So we'll have to wrap up this segment really quick. So your favorite in the beginning was Gonzaga. Now that we're closing in on the Elite Eight, does that change, or do you still have them as your favorite?
I still have them as my favorite. I think that they're just a better defensive team than anyone that's left. And I think that going up against Arizona is going to be a tough matchup for them on Saturday. But I still have Gonzaga. I picked them in the beginning, and I'm going to stick with them. So I think Gonzaga, Kansas still in the finals, but we'll see what happens. Obviously, there's a couple games in between here and there. So,
yeah, I've got North Carolina was my favorite going in. I still like them. I think they had a really tough second round, and we'll see what they can do tomorrow night. But I think if they can make it to the Elite Eight and knock some rust off, I think they'll be fine, and they'll be the team to beat, in my opinion.
I think that North Carolina has the toughest road to the championship game. They've got to play Butler, and then they play the winner of UCLA, Kentucky, and then they've got to play the winner of most likely Kansas and Oregon.
So right.
That road to the championship game is really tough. So we'll see what happens. But I think that maybe a North Carolina Gonzaga championship game would make for a pretty fun podcast between the two of us.
Oh yeah. Let's hope that happens then. So let's switch gears and go over to professional basketball. We've got the Blazers playing the Knicks tonight, and the Blazers are out to an early lead after one quarter right now. The Knicks rested some players, you know, I don't know if there's anybody you've heard of, Garrett, you know, guys like Carmelo Anthony, Derrick Rose, nobodies, you know, guys that you wouldn't be able to pick out of a lineup. So, you know, we're getting the Knicks' best shot tonight at the Moda Center, and you know, the Blazers jumped out to an early lead. They really need this one because, you know, they lost to Milwaukee earlier this week. Denver won against Cleveland, so now they're a game and a half back after that nice road trip where they went 4-1. You know, is this a team you think is still capable of making the playoffs? I mean, they've got, I think, 12 games, or not 12, they've got 10 games left, and I think only one or two of them are road games. So they've got a lot of home games still to go. Denver, on the flip side, has a lot of road games to go. I think only a couple home games. So the Blazers probably have the easier route. But is this something you think they can pull off?
Yeah, I still think the Blazers are probably the 8th seed in the West. I think that they find a way to get ahead of the Nuggets. And I think one of the keys is that Portland is going to hold the tiebreaker. Right now they're up 2-1 on the Nuggets. They play next Tuesday.
Right.
And so obviously that's a crucial game. But even if they lose that game and the season series is 2-2, the next tiebreaker is division record. And right now, the Blazers' division record, as we sit right now, is 7-3. They've got a bunch of division games left. They play Minnesota 3 more times, one of those starting this Saturday. They play Denver again. They play the Jazz twice. But the Nuggets, their division record is 5-8. And so if Portland wins 2 more division games, they're going to hold the tiebreaker. And so obviously that Denver game is huge, but it's not 100% crucial to make the playoffs. If Portland beats Denver and then just beats Minnesota one of the two times, or if they beat Denver, they've got the tiebreaker.
Right.
But I just think that Portland's route is easier. I think that one thing that you can't really quantify, you can't really factor, it's just the weirdness of late season basketball. Last week, Denver played the Clippers, and the Clippers didn't even travel with Blake Griffin, Chris Paul. They left all those guys in LA. And so Denver caught a break and got an easy win. And now tonight in Portland, there's no Carmelo, there's no Derrick Rose, and we're watching a bunch of guys that you can't pronounce their names.
Right.
And so I think that there's going to be some instances of this happening here in the final couple weeks of the season, because teams will either be seated where they're going to be seated and not moving up or down, and so they're going to rest their guys for the playoffs, or there's going to be teams in the bottom of the barrel that are trying to get the best pick they can. Portland plays Minnesota on Saturday night at home. That's a big game, division game. Minnesota's still technically in the playoff chase. So I think that'll be a competitive game. And then they fly down to L.A. and have a back-to-back against the Lakers. And so if this was in November, December, you'd think, oh, that might be a pretty tough game. The Lakers don't want to win games right now.
Nope, they want to tank.
The Lakers want Lonzo Ball. They want to do anything they can do to get Lonzo Ball to be their point guard of the future. Magic Johnson is now in charge of that organization. Who models their game after Magic Johnson? It's Lonzo Ball. And so the Lakers still want to win. And so the Blazers could get a freebie on Sunday night. Like, who knows? But that's the thing, is it's hard to quantify some of those factors. But I think when it's all said and done, the Blazers end up in the 8th seed and Denver's on the outside looking in.
And I think that's probably best for this Blazer team. I mean, they need to get some playoff experience. I mean, they got some last year, but it was mixed. And, you know, they didn't get the Clippers' best shot because they lost Griffin and Paul after Game 3. They didn't get the Golden State Warriors' best shot because they were missing Curry the first two games. And then he was a shell of himself the rest of the series because he was coming back from an injury. They need to get some real quality playoff experience with Damian and CJ and Nurkic and really grow this team. I mean, yeah, a draft pick would be wonderful, but they can worry about that later and parlay their 3 picks into maybe a higher pick. But I really want to see Portland make the playoffs and then also do something with it.
Well, yeah, I agree. A couple weeks ago, I was leaning towards I wanted them to kind of give up and tank and see what kind of draft pick they could get. But at this point in the season, if the Blazers don't make the playoffs, their pick isn't going to be very good anyways.
Right.
It'll be 13-14. Whereas if they make the playoffs, their pick's going to be 15-16. And so for that 2-3-4-pick swing, the playoff experience is going to be crucial for this team. They're still the youngest team in the league. They need to keep playing, keep bonding with Nurkic. And I think this team has a bright future, and I don't think that that 3- or 4-pick swing in the draft will have terrible influence on this team moving forward. Plus, like you said, they do have those couple extra picks that they can move up and move around and have some flexibility. So I think that this team's going to be in the playoffs, and I think that that's something that this city can get behind and look forward to, even though it's been kind of a tough season.
So in switching topics really quick, we haven't really seen any of it in Portland, but the national spotlight this week is on NBA stars taking games off to rest, and sometimes it's on the nights of back-to-backs, other times it's not. Where do you stand on that? I mean, that's not really something you and I saw when we were growing up, and now it's a very prevalent issue, especially with the mega teams, with the big threes. They're taking nights off, and it's not even, you know, we'll rest LeBron one night and we'll rest Kyrie the other night, or we'll rest Kawhi one night and we'll rest LaMarcus the other night. They're always taking their groups of guys out the same nights. Is that something you're okay with? I mean, because that keeps them fresh for the playoffs, which is when we really want to watch anyway. Or is that losing steam in the regular season where you've got fans paying lots of money to see mega stars in playing against each other? Like, we had the Clippers and Cavaliers last Saturday night, and the Cavaliers decided to sit their big three. And granted, both Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving were coming off injuries, but even when they're healthy, they still do this. And I understand it's a grind, and the season is longer than it's ever been with the extended first round of the playoffs. But you have a product to sell, and I'm curious if that product is just as good when we're taking it away for X amount of games.
Well, I think I can see both sides of the argument. LeBron James has been to the finals 6 seasons in a row, and so LeBron James has played more games than anybody else in the league. He's getting older. So I can understand resting. But at the same time, these TV networks pay lots of money for these games. And so as this conversation has evolved throughout the week, I think that it's pretty simple. I think the league goes to the teams and says, okay, here's our end of the deal. We're going to extend the season by 10 days, 14 days. That's going to eliminate 3 or 4 or 5 back-to-backs for each team. You're welcome. But in return, what we're asking is you do not sit your guys on the road or on national TV games. If you want to rest your guys, rest them on a home game when it's on your local cable channel.
Right.
If you rest them on the road, it's a $10,000 fine per player. If you rest them during a national TV game, it's a $10,000 fine per player. So if you sit the big three on the road on a TNT game, all of a sudden $60,000 check is having to be written by the owner the following Monday. And so I think that that'll get the team's attention. I think that the teams will appreciate the concession of making the season a little bit longer. But I do think that something has to be done. I remember I was at a Blazer game 2 years ago, and I got talking to a guy. He took the day off work, drove down from Spokane. He was wearing a Tim Duncan jersey, paid, I think he told me, $120 for per ticket for 2 tickets for him and his son, and he showed up to the game and Pop rested Tim Duncan. And so, like, yes, fans are being impacted by this.
Right.
I don't think the league cares as much about the fans in the stadium. I think they care more about the TV product.
Yeah, it's the television revenue.
That's where all the money comes from. And you see this huge spike in the salary cap. They're talking Paul Millsap is going to opt out of his contract next year. They're saying his contract in Atlanta could be 5 years, $204 million. That's $40 million a year. If you're getting paid $40 million a year, $500,000 per game, I don't think you need to rest games. Find ways to rest your body, to get on the court. I just think that technology is as good as it's ever been, and guys didn't rest games with the science and the healing, the medicine that we have today. And so I think that these guys need to be on the court, but I also think there needs to be some concession from the NBA. Make the season a little bit longer. Get rid of some of those back-to-backs. At the extreme, cut the season down to 75 games instead of 82. But I don't see them doing that, because then it's 7 more games a year that they can't sell tickets or TV revenue for. So, but I think that it's going to be an ongoing conversation until there's some kind of collective bargaining on it, until there's some kind of compromise. But the league's not going to be quiet about it. Adam Silver sent out the memo to the owners, and I think that this is a topic that's going to continue.
Well, I think they've got to do one of two things. They either need to make the season longer without increasing the number of games, or they need to implement that these young players have got to stay in college longer. Because I do think there's something to LeBron saying that he's been in the league since he was 18 years old. he's got, and so, yeah, he didn't play in college, but on the flip side of that, yeah, he didn't play in college. College, where they only play 30 to 35 games a year if they do really, really well, whereas in the NBA, you could be the worst team in the league, you're still playing 82 games, and if you do better than that, you're playing even more. And there's, you know, it's, you're playing against better competition and you're playing against more physical competition. So I think you either need to go back to the rule where they have to be a junior or better, or you need to make the season longer to allow for bigger breaks on these road trips where you're not doing back to backs two or three times a week. Even once a week, I think, is crazy. You have the Clippers who are playing five games this week, and that's nuts.
The Blazers had a five game week 2 weeks ago, I think. So, yeah, I agree. It's crazy, and I think that there are things the league can do. I also think one thing that would be fairly simple is just get rid of the preseason.
Yep.
It's a joke. The starters play for a quarter here, there, but you can get ready for the season in training camp. You can get ready for the season on your own. If teams that are close together want to throw like a scrimmage or an exhibition, sell some tickets or whatever, go ahead. But just get rid of the preseason. The NBA doesn't take it seriously at all. They play eight games. Just get the guys ready to play regular season games and get over with the preseason. Maybe just get rid of the eight preseason games, but start the season when you would have started the preseason and extend the season that much. And
it'll help.
I think that would make big difference for these teams down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see what Adam Silver does with that and what the other owners want to do. I think the veteran players are definitely wanting the season to get either shorter or, you know, take some games away or take the preseason away. But, you know they need their rest because the playoffs are what really count, and they're not feeling like they can get there and be healthy or as close to healthy as you can be if they're playing 82 games, full gambit, giving 110% every night, traveling all the way, you know. They're going all over the place. You know, they also need to get some of these road trips are a little insane how far they make them travel. So they definitely need to work on that. But we're getting close to the end of the program tonight. And we know that all of you guys have busy lives and we want to get you back to them. But Garrett, I'd love to do something you brought up before the show, a little lightning round where we kind of ask each other a few questions and kind of just see what the answers are without any precursors. So I don't know if you want to kick that off or if you want me to go first.
Sure. Yeah, I've got a few questions for you. This one I asked earlier, but I'm curious to your answer. Which Oregon Duck is most likely to declare for the draft this year, Dorsey, Brooks, or Bell?
I think that Brooks should stay, but I think he's going to declare.
Okay. Which NBA team is peaking at the right time heading into the playoffs?
You know, I wouldn't have said this a couple weeks ago, but it's Golden State. You know, they looked like they were in a slump after the KD injury, but Curry seems to have found his shot again, and Thompson's as good as ever, and they've got some really good depth on their bench, and they're blowing teams out, and I think they're probably the hottest team right now.
Okay. Which NFL offseason storyline are you following most right now?
Right now, it's Adrian Peterson, because I'm kind of shocked he's not landed with anybody yet. You know, I never assumed that Eddie Lacy or I'm blanking on the Oakland running back now. I'm shocked that those two got contracts before he did, but I thought New York would have plucked him up as soon as they could, and maybe that's still where he'll go. But we'll see. You know, I'm surprised he doesn't have a home yet. He's one of the best in the business and one of the best ever, but he's still sitting out there on the street.
I'm pretty curious because there's always been that link between Dallas and Adrian Peterson. And Dallas doesn't have a whole lot of money, but they always find ways to make money by restructuring deals or doing other stupid things. But Ezekiel Elliott posted on Adrian Peterson's birthday a picture of the two of them and said, "Happy birthday." And so I still am curious if there's something there, because a 1-2 punch of an aging Peterson and Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield could be nasty for that team.
Even with the offensive line getting some pieces taken away in free agency, that's still one of the best lines in football. That'd be just scary to see the two of them back there.
Yeah. Okay, and then one more question.
Okay.
If you had to bet a paycheck right now, would you bet that the Blazers make the playoffs?
Yes. I would bet that paycheck. I would hope they'd reimburse me if I'm wrong, but I'm willing to go out on a limb and take them at face value.
I would agree. I think they're going to end up in the playoffs. I think that they're playing really well right now. There was a hiccup against the Bucks, but I think their schedule lends it to a pretty smooth transition the next couple weeks into the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't want to go as far as to say they control their own destiny, but if there is such a thing in the NBA, they have that. So, you know, they've got as close to that as they can get.
If they beat Denver during next Tuesday's game, I think they control their own destiny.
Yeah. So let me ask you a few quick questions, and then we'll have to sign off for the night. What was your favorite cartoon as a kid?
Favorite cartoon? I really liked Doug.
That's a great show. I've actually had the Doug theme song as my ringtone before, and everyone's like, "Is that Doug?" I'm like, "Yeah, that's right, that's Doug."
My middle name's Douglas, so I always just kind of connected with Doug. That was an awesome show.
Anytime something great happens to my phone, I'm always like, and everyone's like, Doug? Like, dang right, that's Doug. What is your favorite cereal on a Saturday morning?
Favorite cereal? We just had this discussion. I was on vacation last week, and it is such a heated discussion.
But heated, all right.
Guy,
right.
My wife is a Cocoa Puffs girl. And so I would have to say Cocoa Pebbles.
That There's no debate. Favorite. It's Cocoa Pebbles. And if you're in a hurry, Cocoa Dino Bites will do just fine.
And a few years back, I put on Facebook Cocoa Puffs. And I have never had so much interaction on my Facebook page ever. People are so opinionated.
It's a hot topic.
The difference between those two cereals.
And if you're in love with one, you probably hate the other and vice versa. And that's fine, you know. And there's those weird, wacky people in the middle that love Fruity Pebbles. I don't know what to say to them, but I'm definitely Cocoa Pebbles myself.
Yeah, we don't associate with Fruity Pebble people.
No. If you could hop in a time machine tonight, do you want to see the LeVar Ball Michael Jordan showdown?
Absolutely not. If I had the opportunity of getting in a time machine, I would not waste my time to get back there. If I got in a time machine, I would go back to the 1977 Blazer Championship, and then I joined that parade right alongside Bill Walton.
Good
Bill
man. Shonley, good answer.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I was born in 88, so I missed out on all that. So if I could jump in a time machine, I would not waste it on LeVar Ball. I would go back, and I'd see Blazer history.
You got here just in time to see two crippling finals losses.
Yep.
And the fifth and final question is, do you want to see the Blazers in the playoffs this year? Or so if you had a choice, you could give them the number one pick or they make the playoffs as the 8 seed tonight, which one are you giving them?
Oh, I'd give them the number one pick.
Really?
There's no question. I think with the number one pick, whether it's Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball or you trade back, I think that it just opens up the options and it changes the course of the franchise. But I think that number one pick, with it being so far out of reach, that I'm excited to see him in the playoffs. But if it was number one pick or 8 seed, it's number one pick all day, every day.
Well, and you know, it sounds crazy because it is crazy. But, you know, Danny Ainge has some connection to the Portland Trailblazers. Maybe they call him, take him out for a beer or two, and then offer him their 3 picks for his number one and make that deal happen and make the playoffs. That works for everyone. Everybody wins.
Yeah, we'll see. I think that it's more likely that the Blazers package those 3 picks and move to 4, 5, 6, somewhere in that range. I just think that number one pick is going to have a lot of people after it that are going to want to throw young players and just try and get up there any way they can. And I don't see Neil Olshey trying to mortgage the future to get up to the number one pick. So I think that the Blazers most likely will end up in the top 10 by trading up. And I think that they're going to go target a small forward, whether it be Josh Jackson, Justin Jackson, Jonathan Isaac, one of those guys. I think they're going to target in the top 10.
I'd really like to see them go after Kennedy Meeks. I think he'd be a perfect fit in Portland as a power forward to go with Nurkic and the backcourt game you have, and then also get a small forward that can play on the wing that's maybe a starting caliber player that we don't really have today. You know, we've got Evan Turner and we've got Alan Crabb, but and Mo Harkless, but neither of them can really play starting small forward. Love to see an old school kind of Charles Oakley type and a Kennedy Meeks lining up with Nurkic, and then have a really nice shooting backcourt with a small forward that can play 3 and D. I think that'd be really great for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're at the 45-minute mark, so we got to go. But Garrett's been a lot of fun. Really love having you on the show, and excited to have you back in the next couple of weeks and talk some more March Madness. I'm really hoping we get a North Carolina-Gonzaga showdown, and we can see what our two teams can do with our brackets. Hopefully be head-to-head in the final.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And the final four games are next Saturday. So if you have me on next Thursday, we'll be ready to talk Final Four and see where we're sitting.
Sounds good to me. Well, thank you again for joining us, and thank you all for listening. We will see you next time. This has been Episode 8 on Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. Don't forget to check out the band Linebacker. They are awesome, and you'll be an awesome fan. Check them out. Thanks again. Thanks for listening.